Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Welcome to the Dog Pod, the one and only true home for fans of the University of Washington Huskies tackle football team. Gentlemen, we are halfway through our 2020 voyage to reclaim the title of King of the North.
King of the North.
There you go. I'm here with Law Dog and Mitch. Gentlemen, last week we were reeling in our cancellation of Apple Cup week, but we were served our post-turkey dinner with a sweet taste of a second half onslaught surprise pie and our 24-21 victory over the Utes of Utah. We'll talk about that, but bring on the gentlemanly scholars of Stanford this week. 1 p.m. on Stanford on Big Fox. Before we get into all this, today's show brought to you by RockerTrucks.com. RockerTrucks.com. If you're snow skating this winter, and if you're not, you should be. Get off your grandpa's downhill skis. You need the original Rocker Trucks. They got punks, lowriders, hardware, risers. Pair them with a LibTech snow skate. Head to Crystal, Stevens, Snoqualmie. I don't judge where you go. Go where you want to go. Check them out. RockerTrucks.com. Guys, should we talk Husky football?
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. We'll make it happen. Apologies to next week's sponsor, Goldman Sachs. We will get to you. Sorry, couldn't get to you this week. 4:30 on ESPN for all the nation to see. Guys, Law Dog, you're going to grade the offense. Professor Mitch, you're going to grade the defense. But can we survive the cliff notes of this? Should we go through it?
I'm watching the replay right now, BT. It's so much sweeter when you know how it ends.
It's much more palatable. So the Utes of Utah, they showed up to face the Huskies, unlike those silly group of pusetas down south in Provo. They showed up to Husky Stadium. We played. Gentlemen, it was a tale of two halves, one of which totally sucked. We got to talk about it. Now, last week, we got to poke fun at the expense of the Wildcats, right? Reading aloud their pathetic drive chart, but well, what's good for the goose? Are we ready for it? Good for the gander. UW's first half drive chart. Here we go. Started off. First series, 6 plays, interception. 3 plays, 6 yards total, punt. 3 plays, 5 yards total, punt. 10 plays, 43 yards, try to draw Utah offsides, fail, move the field goal attempt back 5 yards, miss the field goal. 7 plays, 34-yard drives that lasted a total of 42 seconds, ends in an interception on a Hail Mary that almost gets run back for 6. There is your 5 first half offensive possessions. That's one hell of the Dogs offensive resulting in a big fat donut. Now, in the meantime, the first half Utah, they overcome an early fumble. They proceed to run all over us, including Jake Bentley, who like somehow on third down we're making look like Michael Vick. They put up 134 yards rushing on us. 2 rushing touchdowns, a beautiful passing TD to Bryce Thompson. We limp into the locker room down 21-0. The of little faith turn on to Golden Girls. They stopped watching, but the rest of us, we stuck with it. Now, something happens at halftime because the Dogs come back fired up. They put up 17 points in the third quarter. Things got one-sided real fast. The D steps up. Elijah Molden, player of the game, he picks off a poorly thrown pass that was meant for Britt Covey. They pop the ball out of Ty Jordan's hands in the end zone, picked up by ZTF. Wasn't all smooth sailing, though. Demo underthrows a pass to Ty Jones with 6:47 remaining, and that gets picked off. But Dogs hold on. They force a punt. That brings us down to 4:31 remaining in the football game. Dogs take over at their own 12-yard line. 88 yards to go, down by 4. Morris dices the Utah offense, capped off by a 16-yard touchdown to Kate Otten. Utah would have one last shot, but Trent McDuffie picks off James Beckley to end it. Dogs win 24-21 in the greatest comeback, or the I guess come from behind victory since 1988. I mean, we've been on the losing end of this so many damn times. It was about time it was our turn. Gentlemen, let's get into it. We got to grade this team. Talk to me about that offense, Law Dog. What'd you see?
Well, first, BT, how many times have you watched a football game in your life that said, you know what we really need right here is to come out at halftime and score a touchdown as we go down the field, right? Or right here, we could really use a turnover. 3-and-out, you know, and this team in the second half just came out and totally delivered on that. And you just it because of that in the second half, I never really felt that agony that I felt in the first half. We were just making progress, clawing our way back in. So let's turn to the offense a little bit. We will get to Morris in a second, but I just want to start by giving a game ball to the offensive line in this game. Yeah. I mean, for 3 weeks, they have looked so good out there, exceeded all of our fairly high expectations, right? Particularly at tackle. That's historically been kind of a tougher position at UW to fill than those inside guards, those hog mollies. But junior Jackson Kirkland, sophomore Victor Kern, those guys are playing really well right now, and it's reflecting, you know, itself in the time Morris has to work back there. It's such a nice luxury for a young QB to have, especially, you know, after some of the offensive lines that we have trotted out there over the last, you know, 15, 20 years. So, you know, this offensive line, they've given out just one sack in three games. And on that play, Morris was kind of run out of bounds. It wasn't even a tackled sack. So they've been doing their job. They get the game ball for me on the offensive side for this game. And then on that note, I also want to give a game ball to Cade Otton. I mean, that guy, you know, we probably haven't talked about him enough as much as he deserves. He's been amazing, both catching the ball, but also on his blocking. He's playing like an All-American, even against a good Utah defense here. All of these guys up front were really, really good. Even in the first half when things were kind of looking bleak, it was not really the offensive line. It was more of a decision-making issue for Morris is how I would kind of frame that up. So I think those guys all get an A for me in this one. And then, okay, turning to Morris. You know, I think he is kind of the anti-Jake Browning to me. I've been thinking about this, and there's just – they both kind of have that brash quality that kind of shows up where it's like the ice in the veins and all that. But they have kind of a lot of really distinct differences. And, like, think about this. Jake Browning – obviously, he would try to make those plays when he was being tackled, and he should have probably had another dozen interceptions in the 4 years he was at Washington from just like throwing something that he never should have tried to throw, right? But he really made those routine plays look so easy that we took it for granted. And what he lacked in arm strength, he kind of made up for with his accuracy. We just didn't really have, you know, a lot of like wild balls out there under Jake Browning, but Morris is kind of, to me, more of like a gunslinger. He's made some really awful decisions in this game, and then, you know, and also in weeks prior, and the Huskies are really lucky not to have paid the full price for a couple of those, right? And then his deep ball and kind of his mid-range passes, they need work. He's just not accurate, but he kind of was clutch when it really counted, right? He got better as the game went along. I just don't know that I ever felt that way about Browning, where in the fourth quarter, it's like, okay, we're going to get Jake Browning's best in the fourth quarter, right? So I know that's kind of a crude analogy, but just I was thinking about that and it really clicked to me. And so I'm giving Morris a B- in this game. I wrestled with giving him something a little bit higher, but that first half counts, you guys, and we cannot ignore how ugly it was. So as the skill positions, I don't think there's kind of a lot to talk about here. The running game didn't really produce in this game the way it has in the first two against the worst two defenses in the conference, frankly. So, but the Huskies' commitment to the running game, I think this is going to be an issue all season. I mean, if they get down in one of these next two games or next few games, you know, Morris has to be a guy who they turn to air it out and get back in the game. They just seem to be sticking with the run so aggressively here in a game. They were down 3 touchdowns, and that's without Richard Newton. So Jimmy Lake won't say what Richard Newton's absence.
We'll never know. I mean,
and we never will know. But you know, if you don't have Richard Newton, then where's Cam Davis? Like, how about that's a chance for him to give him a shot there? He just gets 2 carries. So McGrew and Pleasant, I mean, to me, were fine. But Pleasant, I think we should give him a little bit of credit. I mean, he had a nice night, especially in the blocking aspect, taking on those blitzes from Utah, and then he had a couple of big catches out of the backfield in the second half. So I'm going to give the running backs B-. Receivers, real quick, I just want to say that 38-yarder to Bynum in the second half, I mean, we cannot beat a good defense without a few plays like that to keep them honest, right?
Yep.
And so to me, that was like a real turning point, not just in the game, but also kind of in our season. It was like, wow, we haven't done that. We haven't been able to throw the ball down the field like this. So I thought Puka played a really nice overall game. He had a huge couple of huge catches, especially on that final drive, that diving catch, and then that fourth down reception early that kept the drive going alive. So I'm giving the receivers a B. Overall, I think this offense gets a B. That's kind of a really below average in the first half, but did a great job in the second half.
There's one great points. One thing of dissension I'll say about Demo. There's one thing to lead your team on a game-winning 88-yard drive, and it's another thing to do it after you've played like dog crap and you're down 21 and have thrown those picks and you're a freshman and hanging his head down. And he seems to not – he just – it doesn't seem to affect him.
He's got a short memory, like a relief pitcher, BT.
He totally is. He doesn't have that body language that, he came out there. I mean, I couldn't believe that. And having been on the losing end of this, I'm thinking of road trips down at ASU and Browning's first year up by 17 in the fourth quarter. Boy, it's sweet to be on the other end of it. Someday I would love to know what happened to Richard Newton, if it was team rules or just had, I don't understand if you have a bad week of practice, because I still think he's the best back of the three, but we'll see.
Yeah, just one more point on that. Morris, he had three interceptions in the game. He probably should have had a fourth. That one that was, the diving kind of miss at the Huskies' end of the field in the first half there. They ended up getting it right back and scoring a touchdown anyway, Utah did. But I also want to give a little bit of flack to the coaches for going for a Hail Mary there at the end of the first half. I think you see right there when they almost ran it back for a touchdown, why a lot of coaches don't opt to do that. So, you throw a ball up for the end zone, a Hail Mary like that. Yeah, it might be intercepted. That's a chance you take. I don't think that's all on Morris.
There was one last thing that was interesting, I guess, to get your guys' take in the fourth quarter when they were on that drive. Did you guys also, were you screaming at the TV about the clock management? Like why they weren't taking, they had three timeouts and they weren't taking any of them. And it could not have been, we don't want to give Utah any time. I thought that was kind of an interesting aspect of the offense at the end of the game too.
I just don't think you really get into your pocket and use your timeouts until the final minute. I mean, in the college game where the clock's not continuously running, the final minute, I think, is when you want to start using those. And, it was getting a little nerve-wracking, but it turned out not to matter.
Yeah. I think that one could come around, though. That's interesting. It felt a little bit loose there, and it could have been a little more organized. And this is a young coaching staff as well. But, it turned out fine. That could have been a bigger storyline, though, I think, if for whatever reason they don't score there.
And you could make a case for that Ty Jones, it's an interception to Ty Jones being pass interference. The defensive back's not turned around, hands in the air. In the NFL, that's PI. In college, he's turning around, coming into him, and does block his progress coming back on an underthrown ball. You don't always get that call in college. But that's one of the reasons to underthrow a bit is because you give your receiver a chance to sort of make high point it and then maybe get the call. But that's how it goes. Hey, overall at the end of the day, they got up the 24 points they need. Mitch, let's talk about that defense, bud.
Oh boy, geez, kind of this whole story of this game was the tale of two halves, right? Like, oh my gosh, talk about could do no right in the first half. Giving up big rushing yards, letting Jake Bentley kind of scramble on them. That was pretty darn frustrating. As well as then pick his spots, the touchdown, I believe it was over Alex Cook, was pretty frustrating. And then, what I was excited about was, again, the resiliency of this team, right? It would have been fascinating to see Jimmy Lake's halftime conversation with those guys, right? And I think it's probably not just from Lake. I think this was a culture win in this one too, guys, which is getting me pretty excited on – you got guys like Elijah Molden that clearly walked the talk in this game, and you could see him coaching up guys and getting in dudes' faces. And then, gosh, his interception. I think Law Dog, we had a nice little text chain going with some choice comments, And you were calling out how the defense needed to turn Utah over. And then lo and behold, Molden gets that pick after their opening drive for a touchdown. And you could just feel the momentum on the team. Just, you know, their senior leader, they're all American, gets the pick, you know, kind of undercuts that route, returns it 24 yards, puts them in a position to score. Man, talk about just impact, right? If there's a better All-American player right there, then you show it to me, you know, across the nation. The guy's just a stud. And, you know, I think the thing, you know, that is pretty impressive is you see these young guys. ZTF continues to step up. He continues to, lead the nation now in most sacks per play or something per game at like 2.33 or something like that. And heck, he could have maybe had three. With the you know, roughing the passer call that happened in the first half.
Terrible
right?
call.
It was borderline. And it was borderline. Right.
I mean, that was like you're either getting off the field or, you know, keep a drive going, and they scored a really crucial touchdown. I thought that call was really tough.
It was brutal, but it's great to see his continuation. And, you know, ZTF is interesting to me because he's also getting pressure on the quarterback, which makes me excited, right? Like, you know, some sack guys, you know, that you have in the past would get, you know, maybe a sack every or two every other game or something like that. But they'd show up for the sack, but they weren't really in the stat sheet too much else with hurries and stuff like that. ZTF is doing it pretty consistently. Like, he is moving that pocket around. He is making that quarterback feel his presence, which is getting me really excited about this guy and his progression this year. And you see some guys like Savelle Small start popping. He had three solo tackles, five total tackles. Eddie did what he's, doing every single game, 14 total tackles, four solo. Jackson Sermon. The one concerning thing there, I would say, is your linebackers are making a lot of tackles. I think that's a good sign. They're playing well, but the defensive line got gashed here, right? Like, you know, they had three guys that were really kind of giving it, or sorry, two guys. Ty Jordan had 10 carries for 97 yards, an average of 9.7, a long of 46. Devin Brumfield, 10 carries, 39 yards, average of 3.9. I mean, it was kind of, you're holding your breath there during the game, and they're gashing the UW defense, even in the second half. To a certain extent, I was a little surprised they didn't lean a little bit more if I was Utah on that run game. That being said, the D-line bended but didn't break. That fourth down hold that they had, amazing to have Tuli Leitula Gasanoa back in there. Great to see him out there. We were texting about that. Hey, we see big number 91 back. So, you know, I think overall that D-line gets about a B- from my perspective. I was going to give them lower, but they kind of stood up when they needed to. And, you know, you continue to see the strength of this defense on the back end. The linebackers are playing well. Like I mentioned, the secondary is playing really darn well, specifically with, Molden. Like we mentioned, awesome to see Kyler Gordon get force a fumble that ZTF picked up on. Great to see that guy's athletic ability. So, look, they buckled down when they had to. This is a good defense, guys. I would just like to see them be a little stouter against the run because they're going to need to be in with some of these teams coming up, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, they sure are. And this dates back to last year, right? I mean, this is what we saw. Let's say, I think particularly around the Stanford game last year was when we started really scratching our heads about this. But yeah, I mean, and particularly their ability to create turnovers this year is what's keeping them in these games. This was a fun one, guys. Real quick, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but special teams. What kind of grade do you want to look? We have to address the one big gaffe that we talked about. Peyton Henry missed a field goal. He's missed a field goal in each game this year.
Yeah,
more than he's missed all of last year. He was 90% last year. 90%. We're sitting at 57% right now. And this last one was a bit of a head scratcher. Like, we motioned into a run play and an attempt to kind of draw them off sides. Instead, we draw ourselves off sides, push him back 5 yards. He whiffs, right? So I don't know. Something's going on. And we don't have enough of a data set here and in this few amount of games that we've played, but something's going on, and we're going to need Peyton Henry to be solid coming up soon. Race Porter was fine. Go ahead.
BT, they protected Peyton Henry last year. I mean, they just didn't try him in tough situations. Because of, I think, what had happened the year before, And yeah, now this year they're just turning him loose and saying, hey, you're a third year kicker in this league. Like, you got to figure it out. And, you know, he is what he is. Like, he's got decent range, but the accuracy is, you know, spotty sometimes.
Yeah, but he missed. He miffed on a chip shot last week with it was inside 30 that he should have made. But yeah, you're right. They're pushing him out there for longer. But at the same time, like, you know, he hasn't been as solid as last year. I don't know why we're going for this unless you feel incredibly confident that you can draw them off sides and you're more concerned about your what happened to us, because that play could have been really critical. All right, Race Porter was fined punting. Tim Horn fined on kickoffs. Nothing was returned, which was an interesting decision. Things were landing on the 5, 6, 7, even 10-yard line, and Utah made the decision not to return. Utah fair caught everything, so it's a little bit of interesting. McGrew returned a few kicks, 26 and 22 yards. Utah really solid on special teams as usual, but I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I did not get why Utah was fair catching everything. I think that we're going to play a team, in a week from this weekend, who's not going to fair catch. I mean, we're going to need to figure out how to cover on kicks. And I just think that's one of the weaknesses of this team. I don't know why Whittingham did that. And I thought he was also gun shy on some of those fourth and shorts, especially the way they were running the ball. I don't know what it is about his butthole tightening up when he walks into Husky Stadium, but that guy just doesn't seem to coach very well in Seattle. And I think we were lucky on a couple of those things this week. I think we have to admit.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'd like to see mistake-free special teams, even if we're not razzle-dazzle. We haven't in the past. But all in all, guys, 24-21, that was sweet, man. That was a lot of fun, and I think everybody had a great time watching that game, because we've been on the losing end of so many of those over the last decade or so. Especially, we'll get into it later, having Oregon and others lose and being atop of the Pac-12 North standings. Just even that much sweeter. Should we get into the next week?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about it. Okay, so here we go. 1 p.m. on Big Fox here in Husky Stadium, our fourth home game in a row. It's number 22, 3-0 UW against unranked 1-2 Stanford. Now, gentlemen, lifetime, this is big. We are tied with Stanford, 43-43-4. Whoever walks out of here with a win gets the lifetime advantage. Dogs, with that heartbreaking, one of the more frustrating losses last year, we could not stop the Stanford run. The Dogs lost last year. Remember that? 23-13 in Palo Alto. Let's get into this. Talk to me a little bit about this Stanford team. What can I expect from the 2020 Stanford offense, Law Dog?
Well, you know, this is kind of the tale of two Stanford teams, really. Like, I was kind of giddy about watching them potentially go 0-6 before last week's win in the big game. But it really, they looked so bad in that first week because they were missing Davis Mills, right? And they lost. They got killed by Oregon, 35-14. They just couldn't really get anything going. But then when Mills came back the next week, they lost a narrow lead to Colorado, 35-32. And Mills actually led them in rushing, you guys. So he can, he can move a little bit. They had the WSU game canceled, obviously. That was right prior to the Apple Cup. But then they get back on the horse in the big game, and they finally got a running game going out of Austin Jones. He went for 85 yards and 2 touchdowns. Nothing like Heisman-esque or nothing like Bryce Love used to give them. But I mean, you know, this is something to be concerned about. Running the ball, they're actually last in the conference in yards per game, right? Throwing, their 249 yards a game is good for fourth. Overall, they're ninth in yards per game and ninth in scoring. So this hasn't been a great offense. But, you know, they've also basically played two games with their starting quarterback. So 2/3 of their season. And then the other third, you know, with a backup. So, I also look and say they're not great on third down. They're not great in the red zone. They're kind of in the middle to the back of the conference in those things. So I don't think this is necessarily the quality of Stanford offense that we have seen in the past, but I think if we look back to 2016, right, that was really the game in Husky Stadium that put this Husky team back on the national map, right? Mm-hmm. Killed a top 10 ranked Stanford team, 44-6 in Husky Stadium. And you know how they did it? They got to the quarterback in that game. JoJo Mathis was all in the Stanford backfield. And do we have a guy that can do that in this game? Yeah, I think we do, man. For the first time in 4 years, I'm like, I think we've got that guy. And I mean, I got to tell you, I watched Steve Entman, okay? I went to every game back in the early 90s. I mean, I think that's the guy we're talking about. I'm not saying he's better than Entman. He's got a long way to go to get there, but I mean, that's who's next up for him. I think he, to me, he is a guy, Zion, ZTF, who can just get in a quarterback's face like when you really need it on those big third downs and all that. So if we can do that and really frustrate Mills and really keep their offense on their heels a little bit, I like Washington's chances to neutralize the Stanford offense. We there's not a playmaker on this Stanford offense like Bryce Love. I mean, all respect to Cotter Wennington, I'm not seeing a guy that I am like shaking my boots about.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, if you guys watch the Cal game, you know, with the big game with them, they just didn't seem on offense to have that explosion. You know, they were kind of grinding away like they usually do with the running game, and it was kind of hit and miss, you know, to a certain extent. But the thing that kind of caught my eye is their receivers just really didn't have any separation. Like, Mills really had to get the ball in there, and they just did not look explosive at all. So it'll be fascinating. Now, Cal, you know, has a pretty good secondary, right? Let's give them their due. But, like, you know, I'm with you, Law Dog. You know, I think if we get pressure on Mills, they're going to crumble pretty quickly.
Yeah. Cal, fair to say Cal lost that game more than Stanford won it.
Yes.
Agree with that.
Mitch, talk to me about the Stanford defense, because in previous years, you know, they've been one of the better defenses in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think you stole my thunder, BT. You know, I think Cal at times just was their worst enemy, right? With fumbles, with turnovers, like, you know, the special teams was interesting. Clearly, that's how they lost the game on the blocked extra point at the very end. But man, my impression is it was more Cal getting in their own way than the Stanford D really taking over like they have in the past. And so, you know, I just feel like this is a mediocre team, guys. Like, I'm just going to put it out there. Like, they did get pressure on Garbers. Garbers ended the day 19-29 for 151 yards, averaged 5.2 yards per throw. He had two TDs, no INTs. But again, it was just like dudes dropping balls, like, you know, fumbles from the running backs. Damian Moore had 10 carries for 121 yards, average 12.1. So, you know, I think this Stanford D line is, you know, susceptible. If you come up and push them around, which I expect the Husky offensive line to do that. You know, they did get some pressure, like I mentioned, on Garbers. They had a couple guys that got on them. And so I just, you know, again, though, I think this is just a step back from a Stanford team that we've seen from defense. They don't have the stud linebackers that they've had in year past. You know, maybe a good corner or two, but they look mediocre to me against Cal.
Yeah, you're totally right. And if you look at the special teams, like you talked about, it's kind of interesting because they're sort of up and down. Like, you know, you could argue that they won the game for you against Cal. Right. I mean, you could say
blocking
that.
That extra point. Yeah.
Blocked the extra point, recovered a muff punt. That defensive end, Thomas Bacher blocked it. Right. That would have tied the game. Look, I mean, sure, that's right. But then I'd say on the other side, on the Oregon game, and I talked about this a few weeks ago, you could say they lost it. There's nothing like missing four field goals to completely flip. Not only it's not about the 12 points that you give up, but you're losing field position. You're losing momentum. And that's Jet Toner, who's been, you know, who's been lights out over previous seasons. So,
you know, what's going to be crucial in this game, you guys, is, like, unlike last year, right? We have the same confidence going into last year's Stanford game. Oh, we're going to take care of Stanford, yeah. Right? This is no problem. We're going to end that streak down there. And you know what they did on first and second down last year? Seven,
I know.
Nine. I mean, just over and over. And what did Mitch just say, right? We are concerned about them. You know, those inside runs against this young defensive line. So I think that if we're seeing that early on Saturday, I'm going to be a little nervous. Oh. And because we know when Shaw gets to third and fourth and one, they're just going to line up, you know, four tight ends and just go for it. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're actually best in the conference on fourth down for that reason. So I think that is something that we need to really buckle down in those early running down situations. That's going to be key on Saturday.
Yeah, and this isn't a stack the box kind of team. Like, the Huskies just don't really do that. You know, so it, and particularly if Davis Mills is able to run the ball, which has been our kryptonite, even was for a half with Jake Bentley. You know, he had some killer runs and got them out of jams on third down. So
I will say, I think if we were going to spy Bentley, we're in a good position to do that because our DBs can cover, especially these guys, yeah. These Stanford receivers. So maybe that's worth actually just starting out the game and starting there and see how it goes, rather than wait for him to burn you for a couple of touchdown drives.
Yeah. I look at, you know, two more games left in the regular season here. We're undefeated. We're 3-0. We control our own destiny. They've had a couple of bad halves, but overall, I think they're in a really good position with their home game. Now, the wrinkle in this thing, which is really interesting, is everything's weird this year. This is a weird home game because Stanford's already here and they practiced in the Husky indoor facility this week. I mean, so it's just,
that's so weird.
The whole thing is just,
you know, I also want to add a point to that, BT. I think there's something about that where if you get your guys and you're all on the road and it's us against the world, like there's no distractions. Yeah. There's something to that. I mean, Stanford could come into our house like pretty ready to play on Saturday. I think the Huskies need to be ready.
100%. You've been here for a week thinking nothing about, no one's visiting girlfriends. You know, no one's doing whatever. They're heads down on football. Don't have to worry about seeing any family that lives in Seattle the night before the game or anything. And they're all football. This is going to be interesting. Let's get into the picks. Let's get into the pick of how we're going to pick this game. But before we do so, a lot of give me a historical update. The fans want to know, in our pick'em pool, how are we doing? Is Mitch so far ahead most of the fans think he is?
Okay, so I have to say, if we've gotten one question about this from a fan, I would be shocked. But BT, you keep, I think, bringing this up because I think you want me to say these words, which is, BT, you have the lead. You're 10-6 in the picks. You are leading the group. Mitch is 5-4. He missed a couple weeks there. Law Dog's holding up the rear at 8-9 on the season. So we'll see how this week turns out. But I definitely made up some ground. BT extended his lead, and I made up some ground last week with the Beaver pick, and also BT got that Stanford pick right. So
kudos on that Beaver pick too. But let's get into this one. We already talked about it. 1 p.m. on Big Fox here in Husky Stadium. Look, we already covered this. We know UW got the 24-21 over Utah last week. We talked about a Cal favored by 3. Stanford with the upset win. Huskies covered against Arizona in the blowout, but they haven't covered since. They missed against Utah and the Beavs, right? This year, the line started UW by 10. Now it's Huskies by 11.5 with a 51-point over-under. Vegas says 31-20 Huskies. Gentlemen, how say you?
Boy, I'm gonna take the Huskies to win, but not cover 11. These games have historically been tight. I think the Huskies win by 10, but don't cover the 11 points.
Woo. Law Dog, dissension?
Well, BT, I think since you're in the lead, you should have to make your picks first. But I'm actually going to, you know, I came in here tonight thinking I was going to take Stanford. Now I've talked myself out of it. I'm taking the Huskies. I think the talent on this defense, I don't see Stanford putting up 25 points in this game. I really don't.
I liked him at 9. I liked him at 10. I don't like him at 11.5. I do think this won't be like what we saw at Utah, but I don't think it'll be like we saw at Arizona either. I think this one is a Husky win and a Stanford cover. Guys, should we get into the rest of the Pac-12?
Sure.
Let's do it. All right, so next one, 3-0 Colorado at 0-3 Arizona, 4 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. Last week, Colorado faced SDSU on short notice after USC bailed. CU favored by 3, they'd win, and they would cover 20-10. That was a fun one. Arizona at UCLA, they were given 9. The wheels fell off the Zona train, 10-27. They'd lose to the Bruins. Buffs with a 14-8 lifetime advantage, but Zona has won the last 3. Colorado, 3-0 against the spread this year. Zona, I mean, you know which one they covered, that SC game where they actually looked really good. This year, Vegas says Colorado by a touchdown, by 7, over under 59. Vegas wants this thing 33-26 for the Buffs. Law Dog asked for it. I'll give you my pick. I think Colorado wins this thing by at least 9, if not 10. Colorado covers that 7.
I agree.
That's what I've got them too. I think they've really been impressive, and they've got maybe the best quarterback in the conference, right? I mean, he's playing very well. And Arizona, man, I mean, just it's just one thing after another. I just don't see the talent there to compete.
I agree. I think the Buffs take care of business, and they cover those points, that touchdown. You know, the other thing about Arizona is just their body language is terrible. Like, you just see guys, their heads are down, the opposite, like what we were talking about of Demo and others, right, on the sideline. And you could feel the wheels kind of coming off the bus. I think someone's done after this year.
Yeah, you might be right about that, Mitch. And Gunnell might not even play this week. This thing is a mess. I think if all of us, it sounds like if we had to put a confidence interval in this one, this would be our pick of the week, but we're all aligned. Next one, 4 p.m. Two games at 4 p.m. The next one, 4 p.m. ESPN. It's number 23, Oregon at 0-3 Cal. Cal, as mentioned, lost in an upset in big game. Oregon was favored by 13. They would lose, and boy, it was sweet. 41-38. Jamar Jefferson ran all over him. Let's not act like we didn't just enjoy the heck out of that. This is kind of interesting here. So this year, the wrinkle of this is, you guys know, no Tristan Gebbia. Gebbia may be out for the season. Yeah, maybe he shouldn't have been in on that last play where he got injured because it was the stupid. I mean, that thing was ridiculous. Like the calling at the end of that game that Oregon State still won on those last two plays, absurd. And of course, that's how Gebbia gets hit. He's out. Now, little trivia for you. Last 83 games, two ties. How many wins does Cal have? They've played 83 times, two ties. How many wins does Cal have?
Against the Ducks?
This one is against the Ducks. This one's against the Ducks.
20 wins.
I'm going to go with 25. They're both bad.
You guys are both so wrong. I couldn't believe this. 41.
Wow.
41. Cal with the one game lifetime advantage. Look, though, Cal has only won once in the last decade. That surprised me. Cal's only once in the last decade, but previous to that, so much dominance. They still have the one game advantage. Cal has yet to cover a game this year. This year, Oregon is again a 10-point favorite. Over under 58. Vegas says 34-24. Ducks, I think this one is going to be very interesting. Oh, I hate to say this one. I just think Cal is too much of a mess. Give me the Ducks on this.
Yeah, this is tough. It's interesting to see how they bounce back. You know what? I'm going to be contrarian. We got to make up some ground here a little bit. Give me Cal. Give me Cal to cover the 10. I don't think they win, but maybe they keep it closer.
I just think this is going to be a big bounce back. Oregon had big expectations coming into this season. As much as we may not like Cristobal, I think he's going to have them ready in this game. I think they're going to shake off that civil war, and I think they'll be back and ready to play. And I think we're going to have a titanic uncivil war next week. I've been trying not to get excited about it, but I'm taking the Ducks.
Yeah, we're both hoping for Mitch in a much tighter game. But look, I think the Ducks have what it is, and something is off with Cal this year. It hasn't been Garber's fault. He isn't playing as well as we thought he would, but I'm not going to put the blame on him. That team's been tough. Okay, two Pac-12 After Dark games on Saturday to talk about it. Let's talk about 2-2 Oregon State at 0-2 Utah, 7:30 on ESPN. As mentioned, Beavs with a huge win over rival Oregon. Utah reeling after giving up the 21-point lead to our Dogs. So they both covered in their last game, obviously. Another piece of trivia. Here you go. They've met 22 times with one tie. How many wins does Utah have?
I'll go with 6.
Okay. Mitchums.
I'm going to go 10 because most of those matchups are more recent, and Utah has been better than Oregon State.
Ding, 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 ding. 10 wins. 10 wins to Utah. Beavs with a one-game advantage, even though the Utes have won the last four, including – you guys remember this last year? I'd forgotten about this. 52-7. Down in Corvallis last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that was when Utah was just rolling. Beavs 3-1 against the spread this year. This year it opened up Beavs -9. Now it's Utah -11 because Tristan Gebbia is out at least this game, if not for the year. Over under a low 51. So Vegas says 31-20 Utah. This is a real tough one on this. I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't know enough about Gebbia's backup and how they look, but I'm going to trust in Jamar Jefferson. I think that Oregon State can at least keep this thing close, keep it within 9-10. Utah wins, but Oregon State covers that 11.
Yeah, I'm going to take Utah to cover the 11. Just from a perspective that I think their defensive line is pretty good, and they bottled up the Huskies pretty effectively. They probably stack the box here and keep Jefferson under control. And Jefferson scores, but if they lock him down and that backup at Oregon State isn't up to the task, you know, Bentley impressed me last week from a Utah perspective. Mm-hmm. I think Utah rolls in this.
Yeah, I actually was going to go right there. I think this is a matchup issue. I mean, Utah has the horses to kind of stop the run. And what are they? What's Oregon State going to try to do in this game without their starting quarterback? They're going to lean on Jefferson. So, yeah, I am all on Utah on this. I don't see Oregon State putting up 20 points in this game.
Wow. Yeah, the under probably would have been the play on there. Next one, there's another Pac-12 After Dark game, 7:30 on FS1. 2-2 UCLA against, can you believe it, ready to play football this year? 0-1 ASU. We haven't seen ASU since that late heartbreaking loss to USC in week one and discussed it. I mean, this is nuts. Crazy. UCLA already put up 27-10, hurt on Arizona last week. UCLA is 3-1 against the spread. Not only that, they're averaging covering spreads by 9.9 points. UCLA with a 21-14 lifetime advantage over ASU. They've split the last 16 meetings, but maybe you remember that one last year, 32-32 UCLA won when UCLA was really rolling towards the end of the year. This year it's ASU -3 over under 55. So Vegas says Sun Devils 29-26. This is a real tough one. I love what I'm seeing out of Felton. Love what I'm seeing out of UCLA. These guys are rolling this year. I was surprised to see that line went the other way. I think they have the wrong team favor here. Give me the Bruins.
Yeah, BT, I'm right with you. I think ASU is actually a real big candidate to just be super rusty too. UCLA's rolling. They've got momentum. They've been playing pretty well. I mean, their defense is kind of lousy. So, I mean, maybe I might want to also get interested in the over on this, but I'm going to take UCLA.
Yeah, I guess we'll go chalk on this. I'll do the same just from the rust factor. Like, how can you expect a team that hasn't played for, what, 3 weeks now? Has it been 3 weeks to come out?
Since week one.
Since week one. It's been 3 weeks to come out and play against a team that's been playing week over week over week, right? Like, I think that's just too much to ask.
Yeah, and a team who may have packed it in mentally at this point, but we're going to find out. There was a lot of hype on the ASU train early on in the year. Last one. Now, listen, it wouldn't be the Pac-12 if we didn't have a game on Sunday in the middle of the day, but by teams who haven't played in like 5 weeks each. It's 1-1 Wazoo at 3-0 USC, 4:30 Sunday on FS1. Last time we saw these Jokers, SC, it was their most convincing win over the year, 33-17 over Utah in Salt Lake City. Again, in Utah's first game. P.S. first game of the year USC has covered all year. Wazoo lost by 14 at home to Oregon last time we saw them. This one is nuts. Okay, here we go. True. How many times? Look, these guys have played 72 times. How many wins does Wazoo have against the Trojans?
Oh, gosh. 13.
I'll pick the under.
Yeah, 10. 10.
Oh, wow.
This one's bad. SC won by 3 in the Coliseum in 2018. They didn't play last year. Cougs won by 3 the year before. This year, Trojans favored by 13.5. The over-under is 66.5. Vegas wants a significantly highly scoring affair, 40-27 USC. This one's tough. Jaden Delora's coming back. I think they can put up the points. Trojans haven't shown me much. Particularly, I'm going to throw a mulligan out to that Utah game. It was their first game of the year. It's just way too many. Maybe 9 or under, 10 or under. I'd take the Trojans here, but way too many points in a crazy year. Give me the Cougs to cover 13.5.
God, it doesn't feel good, but doesn't this just scream backdoor cover? I mean, the Cougs are going to be down by 20 with the ball, and USC is just going to be like mailing it in, and they're going to backdoor cover this thing. So I'm with you, BT.
Yeah.
Yeah, ditto. Just do chalk up the up the line. I just feel like, yeah, there'll be some crazy play at the end. And, you know, USC's defense is going to be interesting to see how they match up with these guys. I think the Cougs quarterback has really shown some flash, it could be even closer. So, and I agree. I think SC's kind of underwhelmed so far, certainly with some of the teams that they played, like that rosy win over Arizona to start the game, or start in their second game of the year, whenever it was, is looking a little less awesome at this point in time.
Oh yeah, that's right. Look, hopefully we get to actually see all these games this week. I mean, it's always kind of tenuous this year. But again, what a fun win against Utah. I mean, we'll be remembering that for quite a long time. It's probably one of the more fun games that we've watched from home in our living room solo, or maybe with our own family for many, many a moon. And the men of Stanford come rolling in this town. And look, I hope these guys are hungry to avenge that loss from last year. And the last thing I want to do is give up a lifetime advantage win to Stanford. We got to get this thing back on the right track, get that undefeated win 4-0, and then we can start talking about that game next week. Any final comments, gentlemen?
Yeah, let's keep the momentum going. Let's lean on these guys. Let's show Stanford who's in charge of the North and get prepped for, as the Law Dog said, the Northwest Championship.
That's right.
Yeah, this one's going to be, now I've had some time to think about my pick and covering 11 points, and, it's going to be hard not to look ahead. But this team, I mean, this is going to be a test for Lake, right? You're 3-0, you're in first place, everyone's gunning for you, you're on Big Fox, and here comes a team that's giving you some trouble into your house, and they've got nothing to do but look at football for this week. So this is going to be a test to see if he can get them ready and stay focused with what looms ahead, because once we hit Oregon week, it's going to be bedlam.
Oh, and gentlemen, look, we've seen the Huskies play three times this year. None of the games have looked, they've all looked so different.
Right? Yeah,
so true. So true.
What are we going to see this week? But let's get this win against these fools from Stanford. Let's get it. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Oof.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.